ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। श्री चैतन्य चरितामृत ऑफ कृष्णदास कविराज, Translation and commentary by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, Madhya Lila, Diti Nayads, 19th chapter, verse 148. Koti Gyani Madhe. That's how it's given in the word for word translation, all three words together. What's the next word? Haya, haya, haya. Hoy, it's pronounced hoy in Bengali. It's Bengali verse, right? Hoy. Ekjon. Mukta. Koti mukta madhe. Durlabh. Ek. Krishna bhakta. That's how everyone will pray. Pronounce it, but actually, according to the meter, it's supposed to be 14 syllables to each line, but many of them are not pronounced in modern Bengali. Koti gyani madhye hoy ekjon mukta. Koti mukta madhye durlabh ek Krishna bhakta. Koti gyani madhye hoy ekjon mukta. Koti mukta madhye durlabh ek Krishna bhakta. Koti gyani madhye. Out of many millions of such wise men. Such, referring to the previous verse, in which it's been described how there are so many. Eta brahmanda pari ananta jivagon. There are unlimited numbers of jivas in the universe, and there's moving and non-moving, and various grades of life get up to human beings. And now, various grades of human beings, the gyanis are almost at the top. And top of all is the devotees. And then the next verse after this is, I believe, Brahmanda Brahmite. Whoops, can't say it. Anyway. So, Koti Gyani Madhye, there are many millions of such wise men. Hoy, there is. Ekjon, one person. Mukta, actually liberated. Koti Mukta Madhye. Out of many millions of such liberated persons. Durlabh, very rare. Ek, one. Krishna bhakta, pure devotee of Lord Krishna. Out of many millions of such wise men, one may actually become liberated, mukta. And out of many millions of such liberated persons, a pure devotee of Lord Krishna is very difficult to find purport. In Srimad Bhagavatam it is said that due to their poor fund of knowledge, the gyanis are not actually liberated. What? How does that verse begin? Anyone? Yenye ravindaksha vimukta maninas. They think they're liberated, but they're not really liberated. They simply think that they are liberated. The perfection of knowledge culminates when one comes to the platform of knowing the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavaniti shabhyate. The absolute truth, satya vastu, is described as Brahman, Paramatma and Bhagavan. Knowledge of impersonal Brahman and the Supersoul is imperfect until one comes to the platform of knowing the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It is therefore clearly said in this verse, Koti Mukta Madhye Durlabh Ek Krishna Bhakta. those who search after the knowledge of impersonal Brahman or localized Paramatma are certainly accepted as liberated, but due to their imperfect knowledge, they are described in Srimad Bhagavatam as vimukta maninaha. Since their knowledge is imperfect, their concept of liberation is imperfect. Perfect knowledge is possible when one knows the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is supported by Lord Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita. Bhuktaram yagyatapasam sarva loka maheshwaram suharadam sarva bhutanam yatva mam shanti mritchati. A person in full consciousness of me, knowing me to be the ultimate beneficiary of all sacrifices and austerities, the Supreme Lord of all planets and demigods, and the benefactor and well-wisher of all living entities, attains peace from the pangs of material miseries. Research is going on for the karmis, jnanis, and yogis, but until the search is complete, no one can attain peace. Therefore, the Bhagavad Gita says, Gyatva maam shantim ritchati. One can actually attain peace when he knows Krishna. This is described in the next verse. Oh, which is Krishna bhakta nishkama taiv shanta. Bhukti mukti siddhi kami shokali ashanta. So out of many millions of jnanis, one may be liberated. Out of many millions of such liberated persons, one might be a devotee. Krishna bhakta. Or Srila Prabhupada gives here, pure devotee. So where are all the millions of jnanis? Where are they? Where's even one? If we take a jnani to be someone who tries to come to the spiritual platform by the process of knowledge, prajnanam brahma, wisdom is spiritual, something like that, or niti niti, examining, not this, not that. Not many. Not here in Sri Rangam anyway. Well, on Harinam yesterday, I did see a poster of the... Did you see that? Chandrasekharendran? Someone had on the board outside the house. What was it said? Did you look and see? No, you're absorbed in Harinam, but you did see it.
I saw
some poster. Not many Mayavadis around here. All glories to Sri Ramanuja Acharya. It seems that nowadays there are more devotees than jnanis. At least there are more who are seriously committed to a life of Krishna consciousness than there are who are seriously committed to a spiritual life of impersonal searching. I'm not sure if that's true, actually, because if you take together all the sadhus in North India, and Ramanandis are somewhere in between, actually more over that side. But anyway, we don't find a lot of jnanis, and mukta seems to be very rare. And then who's going to be that one rare devotee? That would normally be the situation. It's not that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who's stating this, is speaking something untrue. We're living in a very special time. The time of when the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is flowing, Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, to know Krishna is not a very ordinary thing in human society. There are always devotees present in human society, but at the present time there are many more, a higher percentage, than would normally be, because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he inaugurated the flow of devotional service by having acharyas, Ramanuja Acharya, Madhva Acharya, they appeared before him and they inaugurated that flow. And even in Bengal, Orissa, Jaidev Goswami, there are so many devotees who came prior to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu brought their teachings to perfection. How to go even beyond the conception of being liberated. The jnanis, in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's terminology, jnani means like that, an impersonalist. Generally means like that. So their aim is to become liberated from this material world, but that's not an easy thing. Not very easy. Especially by that process, because it is difficult to get out of this material world, but by surrendering, taking shelter in Krishna, then it's possible. And if one doesn't take shelter of Krishna, then it's very difficult to be liberated. But pure devotional service derides even the concept of liberation. This is one of the six symptoms of pure devotional service. Srila Rupa Goswami, in his thesis, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, once in the beginning establishes what's he talking about? What's the subject here? He's talking about bhakti rasa. What kind of bhakti? He's talking about pure devotional service, which has six symptoms, one of which is moksha laghutakrit. It makes this liberation, which is very difficult to attain, makes it seem like something insignificant. What is very difficult to attain? From our something we can relate to maybe more easily. To become a dollar billionaire, to have $1 billion, it's not an easy thing to attain. We can hardly expect out of the people who really make it their goal of life to be a billionaire, although you can subtract something from your bank account and make it more difficult to become a billionaire, put yourself $2,000 back by going to a seminar on how to become a billionaire, and they might tell you just desire it. If the power of desire, you can sit there desiring it all your life and you won't become a billionaire. It's another method of the person who gives the seminars, they might become a billionaire, but no one else becomes a billionaire. They're cheating. It's another way of cheating. If people want something cheap. So it's very difficult to become a billionaire. How much money would you have to make being a billionaire seem something insignificant? Just like among materialistic people, if someone is middle class with their own house and they're working as a lawyer or a doctor or something like that, then they consider socially very insignificant a street sweeper. Right, so he's just insignificant. So how much money would you have to have if you went into a room of billionaires and you think like that about them? There would be a lot of money. Who can imagine? Is there anyone in this world who would go into a group of billionaires and think of them all as insignificant? I don't know. I don't move in that kind of company, nor do any of you. But just giving some idea, how exalted is the position of pure devotional service? Must be difficult for a multi-billionaire to relate to others. If you can't, just like the ordinary middle-class person, they don't relate with a sweeper in the street. They have a different kind of mentality and outlook and social group. So a billionaire doesn't relate with ordinary people like us. It's just like between a middle class person and a sweeper in the street. There's such a gulf of difference, you can't relate with them. So we're aiming at pure devotional service, and our aim of life is so different, it makes us very different from other people. That's clearly seen when we all go together on Harinam Sankirtan. We are different to other people. Not everyone comes and joins us. Sometimes some people come and join us. Some at least half crazy elderly woman joined us yesterday. I wasn't actually sure whether she was a woman or just dressed as a woman, but anyway, she was definitely at least half crazy. But she's not going to come and join us and fully and do what we're doing, but she joined us for a little time. So here people appreciate the kirtan. In other places they may not appreciate very much. Outside of India may not appreciate, or in the Western countries often people appreciate because they think it's fun. They don't think it's something very spiritual. They don't have any idea of spiritual, many people. But they think it's something, fun, and they may join in and dance also for a little time. They think it's, people are having fun, that's great, that's what life is all about, having fun. They may say that also. But in our day-to-day life, moment after moment, to be different can be difficult. It's easier if we're all together, living in an ashram, or if the householders are all living together, just like in Salem, they have that Vrindavan colony where the householders live together close to the temple, they come to the temple. Or in our farm communities, it's easier. Otherwise, you get questions, just like one of the questions that was given in writing yesterday, which wasn't answered yet. It's not so easy to answer. Well, how do you deal with the next door neighbors and the people around you when you want your children to be devotees, but they mix with the kids next door who introduce them to TV and chocolates and all the kind of things you don't want to introduce them to? What do you do? Do you become normal like the people around you who maybe say, who are these people? They don't let their children play with our children. They think they're better. They don't let their children watch TV. What kind of parents are they? They'll say bad things about you. So in day-to-day life, to be different can be very different, very difficult. At the same time, we have to keep the ideal. If we want to be normal, then what's normal in this material world? Punarapi jananam, punarapi maranam. That's normal, getting born and dying again and again and again. It's not normal to make the effort to come out of that. Just like someone, if they don't eat the same food as the other people around them, or they don't have the same values as the people, it can be very difficult. Because social pressure is very strong. Srila Prabhupada often gave the example that if you associate with drunkards, you'll become a drunkard. Why is that? Anyone here like to become a drunkard? I don't think so. You wouldn't be here if you wanted to be drunkards. In India, drunkard means someone who drinks alcohol. That might seem axiomatic. But in the West, it doesn't mean someone who drinks alcohol, because everyone drinks. It means someone who drinks too much too often. And in India, it means someone who drinks it sometimes, or often maybe also. Just to drink it, they call it. And if you're not committed to not drink alcohol, and you do drink alcohol sometimes, in India, they call it a drunkard. Now, if you associate with drunkards, you'll become a drunkard because the social pressure. You don't want to feel different. And everyone, they'll say, come on, just a little drink. What's the harm? I've been doing it all my life. So the pressure is there. And we don't want to be ostracized. And if you want to, again, Srila Prabhupada gave an example of the Chamber of Commerce, that businessmen, they congregate together, they have a formal club or gathering, so they can meet together, and one businessman says, well, I'm doing this business. Oh, really? I'm doing this kind of business. Well, we can do something together. It's favorable for promoting your business to associate with other people. And they may discuss, maybe a year ago or so, the businessmen, they would discuss, well, how do you deal with GST? And all this kind of thing comes up. The average man in the street, he's not affected by GST so directly as businessmen. So, like that. It's favorable because people have the same interest. It's favorable to associate with people who have the same interest. And Sangat Sanjayate Kamaha, our interests or our desires will develop according to the kind of association we keep, which is why we have these Shravan Kirtan camps and all devotees can come together. Tandera Charana Sevi Bhakta Shone Bash, Janame Janame Mor Ayo Bilash. Another line that Srila Prabhupada would often quote, to serve the lotus feet of the six Goswamis in the association of devotees, this is my desire, that I can do this in every birth. So it is difficult to be a devotee in many ways. Social pressure is there to be normal. Why aren't you normal? Of course, we have to understand that being normal is not a good deal. Being normal means we're miserable in this life and miserable on into the future. We should have a higher ideal than simply eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. That if we analyze what is material life, what is everyone doing, what has the sweeper in the street got in common with the richest man in the world and the animals, eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. Everyone's doing it. There's nothing very glorious about it. We may glorify this. Oh, what a great civilization. Great Britain. Houses of Parliament. Westminster Abbey. What else have they got? The Tower of London. The River Thames. What a great civilization. But what is it? It's an elaborate arrangement for eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. And you may say, well, it's better than the Slovenian eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, because we have famous culture and history. What is the culture and history? Eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. It's something like a big dog looking at the little dog and thinking, oh, I'm better than you, but he's a dog. That's all. Just a dog. The big dog chases away the small dog. It's eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. Jivasya tattva jignyasa. Human life is meant for inquiry, to be at least to be a jnani, to inquire. Atato brahma jignyasa. To inquire, is there anything better than this? Better than this. Yeah, you can work hard and get a job in a big company and you can earn more money. That's better, right? That's better than being a sweeper in the street. Is it to eat, sleep, mate, and defend in an apartment rather than a hovel, a hut? Is it really better? There's nothing better than... Same animalistic propensities are there. All these politicians, what are they doing? America doesn't like Russia. Russia is the big demon, which is great threat to peace in the world. And England's trying to show we're still a big country. China's becoming very strong. It's all just like a bunch of dogs barking at each other. That's all. Same propensity. Otherwise, there's no reason. As Srila Prabhupada mentions, he mentions China in that purport to the Tadvag Visargo Janataga Viplavaha verse, that this literature is meant for creating a revolution, that verse which appears in the fifth chapter of the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. He said, at the present time, our neighbors, China, are threatening India with a militaristic attitude. Prabhupada said, then what's going on? What's the reason? It's just nonsense. Why? What's the point? Fighting over some uninhabitable land? What's the point? What is the cause? It's because people have forgotten their relationship with Krishna. Therefore, they're living like animals. Therefore, there's a great need for propagating this knowledge of Srimad Bhagavatam all over the world. When Srila Prabhupada first came to the West, it's clear that even before he came to the West, he had the idea to bring this message to the most thoughtful section of society, the intellectual class, the leader class. In that same purport, Canto 1, Chapter 5, Verse number 11, I think it is, whatever it is, Srila Prabhupada also says that if only the leaders of society would contribute for propagating this cult of Srimad Bhagavatam, then the whole world can know peace. And he says also in there that the mass of people are like tools in the hands of the big leaders. So Srila Prabhupada is aiming at the big leaders of society who can be influential, yad yad achyuti shreshthas tat tad evetaro janaha sayat pramanam kurute lokas tad anuvartate. Whatever the big people do, the common people follow. Probably the only, he was a very big person in the world at the time. The only one who took up Srila Prabhupada's proposal that big people of the world promote this Krishna consciousness. The only one was George Harrison. He wasn't exactly of the Beatles. He was a famous singer, very, very famous. He wasn't the kind of person that Srila Prabhupada was thinking of when he was thinking of contacting the big people, but Srila Prabhupada took his devotion and that one person, by his contribution, and so many people became Krishna conscious. So many people came to know about Krishna consciousness, and so many people heard the Hare Krishna mantra, largely due to George Harrison. Of course, it's all due to Prabhupada's mercy, but it manifested through that person. He himself said, there's an interview with him by Mukunda Goswami. It's published in that book, Chant and Be Happy. You may have read that he would always be walking around with a bead bag. And in the Western countries, people don't know what a bead bag is. And here they don't. In Bengal, people know. And in North India, they have something similar. That Gomukhi looks similar. So he said, so many people used to ask me that, what happened? You hurt your hand? They thought it was some kind of bandage or something like this. That instead of trying to explain it to each person individually, he said, yeah, I hurt my hand. And he'd just tell them. So in that interview, he said that if at the end of the day or whatever, if I see these people, you people, Hare Krishna people, and I see everyone else, I'd rather be counted with all of you. That's who I belong with. And Actually, just before he passed away also, devotees, it was Mukunda, Gurudas, and Shamasunda. They visited him and chanted with him. And this is something which I just heard a few days ago. John Lennon, those of you from the West have heard of John Lennon, right? Mahaprabhu, you heard of John Lennon, right? At least the young people may not have heard of him. But Steve, heard of John Lennon? Yeah, okay. So he did some service for Srila Prabhupada, hosted him for over a month at his estate. And he also put Hare Krishna on one of his very popular songs. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, the name of different people. There's Yoko Ono and Allen Ginsberg and this and that. And Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, all we are saying is give peace a chance. So he did some service for Srila Prabhupada, and some offense was there also. Something. But he was shot dead. When he was shot, he was brought to the nearest hospital, and it just so happened that a devotee had brought his child to the hospital at the same time. So John was still alive when he was being wheeled face down, and this devotee saw him, and John Lennon's wife said, "John, the Hare Krishnas are here," because in those days devotees, they went everywhere. There's no idea to go anywhere except in the dhoti or sari and tilak, and Yogananda said, "John, the Hare Krishna," and he died. Prabhupada's mercy. He arranged that otherwise he was a long way deep in Maya. But Prabhupada arranged that he could chant or hear the holy names. Just before he died. So the devotee was there, he was dressed like that, and everyone could understand he's a Hare Krishna. He's not normal. Something different. And Yoko Ono appreciated, his wife appreciated, I'm sure John appreciated, as he had to leave the body at that point. So this being different, if we see the world around us, we want to be part of that? We want to be part of the eating, sleeping, mating, defending. Do we have the same values of life? There's nothing attractive there. I've heard that Srila Prabhupada said this, and even if he didn't directly say it, it's a valid point. He said that a sannyasi, symptom of a sannyasi, is that he should be able to go into a rich man's house with all facilities and servants and beautiful women. Generally decorate the houses of rich men, not the houses of poor men. Sri Aishvarya Prajapsavam. That's one of the symptoms of aristocracy, to have beautiful wife. So one should be able to enter such a house and not feel any regret that, oh, I could have been like this. And just to see that, what was that verse you were quoting yesterday? Vishvam Ekam? It's all the same mess. It's all the same. Either you're in a multi-billion dollar mess, or you're in a little hut with no money mess. It's all a big mess. It's all miserable. I've nothing to do with this. The rich man might feel I've got nothing to do with the poor man, and the really rich man who's in Krishna consciousness, he feels I don't have anything to do with the rich man or the poor man. He's chosen a different path. The sannyasi dresses differently. He may wear secular dress, for some purpose, but generally not. Srila Prabhupada said about one of his disciples who was, he was talking of him taking sannyas. He was fabulously successful in book distribution. And Prabhupada, he later gave him sannyas, but first he discouraged it because he said he has to distribute books, and Srila Prabhupada had authorized that the devotees in the West do that wearing regular Western dress. And Srila Prabhupada said that he commented that that might not be very suitable for a sannyasi. He always has to show that he's a sannyasi, he's different. He's living a different life, and people will treat him differently accordingly, which is relatively easy in Indian culture, more difficult in the Western world. But people have no idea how to relate to that. It may be more difficult nowadays for a grihastha Vaishnava to go in dhoti. Not only difficult, they may, just like if you have to go in your job in some company, they may not allow you to go in dhoti, shika, and tilak. I've several times told this. This is about maybe 20 years ago. I was here in Sri Rangam, and there was one very nice young man at that time. There was some festival, and he was chanting from the Divya Prabandhams very beautifully. They called him to chant even though he was young. I didn't ask why. I guess because he had a very beautiful voice and very devotional. And afterwards I asked Ranganathan, my one disciple from here, I think, who was the uncle of that. Oh, where is he now? He's in America. He's working in some company. And then why? Well, sisters to get married, this and that. As I say, he's still able to follow everything in America. Yeah. He goes to work with his tilak and big shika and everything. Then he got transferred back to India, and they wouldn't allow him. In America, they allowed him to go to work with his shika, and not in India. You wouldn't allow. There are more Westerners than the West. So it can be difficult to be a devotee, and just even socially. But we have to stick to the ideal, knowing that what are we doing? Why are we doing this? Why have we all come here? It's a holiday, right? For everyone, it's a holiday. I recently read something, how someone had come to India first of all, and you don't see that many Westerners in India. Maybe you see in Delhi or Goa or somewhere. In Sri Rangam you'll see a few. We saw some yesterday in the taking photos of the Harinam, but generally you don't see many foreigners. So someone had written, when I first went to India and I saw among all the shops, there are so many who's written tourist agency. I thought, why are there so many tourist agencies when there are so few tourists? People from the West are tourists. But then he came to understand that in India, tourism, I guess it comes from the word yatra and yatri. Yatra means you go on a journey, and yatri means someone who goes on a journey, so I guess that got translated as tourist. And where do you go? You go to Sri Rangam and Badrinath, and it's all pilgrims. So the tourist agency is for arranging bus services to Sri Rangam and booking your hotels and things like that. So you haven't come here it's not just a holiday. And for Indian people in general, when they go to a holy place, it's not just for a holiday. The whole culture, this is part of the culture that's still going on. The people, when they go somewhere with their family, they go to a holy place. Now, gradually, they're trying to introduce, just near to our temple, just in Chennai, they have that water park and all this kind of thing. But the culture is there, you go to some holy place. You specifically come here to hear and chant about Krishna in the association of devotees. That is glorious. That you're going on with your day-to-day life, but your aim of life is looking up. Om Tad Vishnu Paramam Padam Sada Pashyanti Suryaya. Suryaya, the godly people, they're always looking up to the lotus feet of Lord Vishnu. In the spiritual world, they have a higher ideal. You're not living just for eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. That's going on. In family life, there has to be some kind of defending also, at least defending your children. But the aim of life is Krishna, high ideal. I can say about my own life that I felt dissatisfied. I didn't want to be part of that society. That I just looked all around me. So now I'm at school, and next they'll send me to university, and then I'll be in some job. I don't want that. But there has to be something, but I had no idea what it was. And I couldn't imagine the gifts that Srila Prabhupada gave, but after coming to Srila Prabhupada, I felt completely satisfied. This is the high ideal. Everything about it is perfect. The philosophy is perfect. The way of life is perfect. There's no selfishness. There's God, not like these Mayavadis, they say, you become spiritual, there's nothing there, actually. Nothing. You go through all this difficulty, Aruhya Kritraya, Parampatam, and what do you get there? You get nothing. And that, oh, I got nothing, great. Yeah, it seemed very stupid to me, and it still seems stupid, and there's a reason for that, because it is stupid. It's definitely stupid. However, philosophically, it's attempted to be explained. So Srila Prabhupada gave all of us this. There's no lacking, there's no defect, there's nothing we have to cover up, there's nothing we have to be ashamed of. It's perfect life, perfect aim of life. And it's tough also. Difficulties, no doubt. I was saying about the tourism agency. I believe that was in the book that I read. I've been reading quite a few books written by scholars about devotees. This is all part of my preparation for my writing this book, The Mood and Mission of Srila Prabhupada. So all of them, all the scholars who have studied ISKCON and taken time to seriously study and not just make a few snide comments on the side, but actually live with the devotees and talk with them, they all recognize that it is an austere and difficult life. And they usually, at least in the beginning of their writings, they make a statement like that. And they don't go into any detail. They say they have to get up at 4:30 in the morning, and that's enough to convince everyone that it's a difficult life. And they don't eat. That struck me when I first joined. You get up at 4 o'clock in the morning, they don't give you anything to eat till 9 o'clock. Because you're used to get up and brush your teeth and eat. It's the first thing you have to do, right, when you get up in the morning. So it's a difficult life. They recognize that. And all the scholars that I've studied, except the ones who were devotees and went away afterwards, who are cynical, they all recognize that it's a difficult life, it's a voluntarily accepted austere life, and they have some respect for that. And they also, all of them, I mean, how many have I read? 6 or 7, something like that. And they also all feel that the movement will go on due to the level of commitment. They feel that there's something substantial that the devotees have got. And they compare it with other groups who, there's nothing there. You go to some group and you chant some mantra and you go on with your life just the same as it is. Except you do a little so-called meditation in the morning for 15 minutes and there are no restrictions on your diet or your life, and there's no particular aim of life. So they thought that the movement will go on because of the high level of commitment. And actually, sometimes in discussing with godbrothers about the differences between ISKCON then and ISKCON now, is that then there was a very high level of commitment. That was just normal and accepted. That anyone who takes to Krishna consciousness, you just give your life in all respects. Whereas nowadays it's quite possible to be a devotee and live at home, come to the temple once a week, once a year, in some cases, on Janmashtami, or maybe not even at all. You may be part of a Namhata group that has a policy of not going to the temple at all. And you get on with your life and you chant Hare Krishna, and no one's really pushing you to become more advanced or to do anything for the movement, and you go on yatras like this once a year or twice a year. So the commitment level in general has gone down. That's commonly observed, but we might think that, well, that's inevitable as we've expanded from being a monastic movement, an ashram-based movement, to being a congregational movement. It's inevitable. As we bring in, you bring in more quantity, especially devotees who, due to circumstances, they can't commit themselves fully. They have so many worldly responsibilities. So the quantity increases and the quality decreases. And another reason for that might be that, well, in youth, it's easy, because almost all of Srila Prabhupada's disciples were young. The average age of Srila Prabhupada's disciples when they joined must have been 21, 22, something like that. Very young, maybe even younger. I fell in the door, got accepted at the age of 18. And there was others younger than me also, joined younger than me. Basu Ghosh was younger than me. I think he was 16 when he joined. There are others even 14, like that. So some had said it was very easy to be idealistic in youth, but then later on, when worldly responsibilities come and you don't have so much energy and you see the realism of the world all around you, then you become more realistic. And of course, most of Srila Prabhupada's followers, came from a hippie background, and there was, the hippies were a funny mixture of idealism and degradation. And somehow they, with a good admixture of Mayavad, they took the degradation to be spiritual also. The free sex and the drugs, it's all spiritual. But most of the hippies, they also became realistic later and got jobs in the secular world, and their ideals, love and peace, became compromised. Some of the devotees who had that idealism in the early days, they didn't retain it and they left Krishna consciousness altogether. And some didn't retain it and they remained in ISKCON. And increasingly, this is a subjective statement, we have mixed devotional service as the norm, instead of the striving for the ideal to be that koti mukta madde dualabh e Krishna bhakta, instead of striving for that highest ideal, we often hear that, well, you just do your devotional service and the Guru does the rest. It's all Guru's mercy. Guru is emanating so much special mercy that you don't have to do anything. You just say, Jai Guru Dev. I heard all this in Bengal from the Sahajiyas. That anyway, we're weak people. We can't follow all these things. But Guru Dev is very merciful. And kirtans, which seem to be more for musical enjoyment than actually glorifying Krishna, and camps like this in which we have to make it fun because it's for families. Have you heard that? They say that we... You didn't hear that. You must have heard that.
Seen it, yeah.
We have to make the atmosphere fun because it's families and they're bringing the children and it has to be fun. So the core focus, how we can make it fun. Well, Krishna consciousness is blissful, but the bliss comes from surrender to Krishna. And the word surrender is not heard as much as it used to be. Maybe in the Bhakti Shastra course it comes up. So again, I'm making a subjective statement, talking about myself. It's just as in my youth, I couldn't relate to everything going on around me and how mediocre and useless it all is. You can fill in the next sentence yourself. What I feel like now in the ISKCON society of today, where the ideal is of pure devotional service. It's not the stated and unstated life of everyone in this movement, or the general direction of the movement. And just as among materialistic people, there's pressure to be normal. Why don't you be normal? Why don't you want to be a devotee? So some devotees, they get around that by becoming normal. They're dressing in normal clothes, even when they don't have to. And that's not so bad, but to imbibe the attitudes of the normal people around us, that's very, very dangerous. That means that's the end of our endeavor to actually surrender to Krishna, because normal in this material world means not being a devotee. And to be a devotee, it's durlab ek Krishna bhakta. It's something unusual. There may be many devotees, and if we hear in India, Srila Prabhupada said everyone is a devotee, but those who are striving for pure devotional service, it's something unusual, which is quite likely one of the reasons why the local people are very respectful of us. When they see our Hari Nam going past, you say they all stand up, and if they're sitting on the steps outside their house, they'll stand up and fold their hands. One reason I can suspect is because they know we're following all these principles. Purity is the force. Srila Prabhupada said that if we simply stick to... It's in one letter, at least one letter. If we simply stick to our principles of rising early, chanting the holy names, four regulated principles, in course of time people will notice and see, understand this is something very special. Oh, another book I was reading is that devotees, the headmaster and headmistress of a school for devotees in part of the Western world. It's an interview with a local news or some newspaper, and they assured the reporter that, yes, we want our children to be engineers or learn a trade, but they'll also chant Hare Krishna. Really? Not very inspiring. I didn't find it very inspiring. You want your children to be normal in the materialistic sense and chant Hare Krishna. The chanting Hare Krishna came second. the statement that we want our children to join the secular society, that came first. Krishna put it round the other way. You think of me first and you fight. Not round the other way. So even among devotees there can be pressure. Why aren't you normal? Why don't you eat kami food? What's wrong with it? It's vegetarian unless you eat that. What's that we saw, Sri Ramcharanavinda? That advertisement is there for some noodles. It's an anti-advertisement. Don't eat it. You saw that? They have all over the Sri Rangam a warning. Savor it, yeah. Don't eat it because it has pig's fat in it. There's a warning all over the town they've put out. So what's wrong with it? Well, it blocks pure devotion. Bishoyer anna khaile, dushta hoiman. The mind becomes contaminated by eating food given by non-devotees. Not only why don't you use contraceptives, but you should. Not only just negatively stated, but like an injunction, you should. Encouraging sinfulness. We have to be realistic. No, not that kind of realism. Real realism is to know that this material world is miserable. We belong at the lotus feet of Krishna. We can't go to Krishna if we're sinful. We can't go to Krishna unless we have any other interest. If we have any other interest than to serve Krishna, we don't go to Krishna. And it's not the science of devotional service, Bhagavat Tattva Vijnanam, that we just mix up our Krishna consciousness with a hefty dose of Maya and say, Guru Kripa Hi Kevala. Guru's mercy is all in all. This is the Sahajiyas, they say such things. And then there's no end to it, the degradation. And then the Guru just delivers you. And then the Gurus also. The Gurus I saw in Bengal, the traditional Gurus, they're eating meat, and not meat, fish. And in some cases, so I've heard, anyway, I won't get into detail. It's horrible. Because why should they be any different? When there's a whole philosophy going around that Krishna is very merciful, He will deliver you. Guru is very merciful, so I'm a Guru and my disciples are all eating fish. They don't even think whether they should or not. It was a great shock when I was traveling in Bangladesh in the 1980s, village to village, we tell people don't eat fish. What? They never heard such a thing. They'll chant Hare Krishna for hours on end, but they never had any idea that there's anything wrong with eating fish. And that may be in our movement, the way, because people join not fish eating, but other things like sense gratificatory devotional service. That's what Krishna consciousness is. And what happens when you read Prabhupada's books? Then you don't read Prabhupada's books because there are so many other books, and who cares for books anyway? Books are for distributing, not for reading. So it may be difficult for all of us to be Krishna conscious in such an atmosphere unless we have a strong resolve to not be like that. It was in that sense, it's very easy when he first joined, because devotees were so different to the non-devotees, or the karmis, as we used to call them, or demons. We just call them the demons, the demoniac society. So the difference, it made it very easy for us to identify, just like George Harrison said, if I have to choose between this and that, I'll choose the devotees. But nowadays, if you choose this and that, there might not be that much difference. That's dangerous. So to keep a very strong sense of identity, that I belong in the society of devotees, it may be difficult. Increasingly so, here in India, where there is a high degree of acceptance, on one hand, because people, if you say, oh, I went to Sri Rangam, I attended some satsang, people think that's nice. But if you don't allow your children to watch TV, you don't give them coffee or tea, they think that's not nice, that's too much. So it's mixed. There's some acceptance and not acceptance, and it can be difficult for us to resist that pressure. So how do we do that? One way is to come to this camp and get charged up with the conviction that this is how we have to live our life, and to throw yourself into devotional service. If we're trying to be halfway, you'll end up more than halfway the other way, because Maya is very strong. And that in itself is part of Maya's tricks, to think that we can be halfway and just go on like that, as if we have strength to resist, of our own, to resist Maya. Another way is to pretend that we're in Krishna consciousness when actually we're in Maya. And we all do that to some extent. But to give ourselves as fully as possible in our circumstances. Again, in family life, there are so many material commitments, but our life should be centered on Krishna in very real and practical ways, not just by saying. Just like, for instance, we have this book distribution marathon. Everyone can partake in that. We have courses in the temple. You can come and take part in that. It's very difficult sometimes because of the social pressure, but we have to choose, what do we want? Do we want to stand on this side with the devotees, or do we want to stand with the non-devotees? We can make a decision which will make the whole thing much easier, which is to move to one of our farm communities, or for young men especially who are unmarried, they could join our ashrams. That one decision makes everything easy, much, much easier. And like I said, we have a Vrindavan colony there in Salem, can join there. And there's, in that colony, it's just the opposite, because outside everyone has a TV, and in there no one has a TV. And even if you want to have a TV, you won't be allowed to have a TV. There's no karmi, no one eats karmi food, I hope. So, being together with devotees, it's very helpful. It is possible to practice Krishna consciousness without getting much association, but that association is very conducive to spiritual advancement. So we're all trying for a very high ideal, to get to that very rare position of pure devotional service, which by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy has become very easy compared to previously, but because we're very weak beings of Kali Yuga, we think it's very difficult. It seems to be very difficult for us. So, yeah, it's difficult. In some ways, Krishna consciousness is very easy. It's very easy to chant Hare Krishna. It's a much easier process of realization than was available in previous ages. But it is difficult. We should know that. And at the same time, understand why we're doing it, remain committed to it. That is my request to all of you, and my request to all of you, we're all helping each other. You can also please help me to be in Krishna consciousness by your sincere commitment to it. We all become enthused, unless we're envious rascals. We all become enthused when we see devotees who are advancing in Krishna consciousness and taking it very seriously, going forward. We become enthused and we think we want to be like that. So thank you for taking Krishna consciousness very seriously and giving me some enthusiasm also. Vanta kalpa tarubhyascha kripa sindhubhya evacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha.